Well, good afternoon. Guess what? Here we are. Friday again. Friday, the old glorious Friday. We start off with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, Todd. It's Friday.
It is, all day.
I know.
And it will be every 7 days from now on.
Oh, is that a new rule?
It is. I've just decreed that
I can't believe all this
every week we should have a Friday.
I mean, you know, why do we have to have that type of complex regulation? Why can't we just have whatever day we want whenever we want it?
Now, that would be interesting.
You know, look at how regulated we are as human beings. How many systems we just buy into without question. It's Friday. Okay, it's Friday. See? We're sheep.
But we look forward to Friday so much.
Well, I have mixed feelings about looking forward to anything. You know, that whole thing about wishing your life away because you're constantly, you know, looking forward to something and not being in the now. I've always wrestled with that.
Isn't there an equilibrium point in between? I mean, you have to look forward because you're excited and hopeful about life, but you don't want to look past what's going on right now.
The hardest thing in the world, and everybody listening to this will agree, is to make the moment count when you're in one of those moments that you don't want to ever end. You know, oh, I wish we could just put time in a bottle and make this moment stay forever. You've been in times like that.
Sure.
And that's when you feel that very abstract, difficult to, if I may use a cliche, wrap your brain around the idea of holding on to a moment and savoring it.
Absolutely.
It's a very elusive thing.
Those things, I don't know. I wonder if most people think about things like that. I'm thinking about things like that quite frequently. I like the whole idea that life has a rhythm and you have to go with the trajectory of events. And that means there's going to be slow periods. There's going to be peaks of excitement and frenzy. And then there's going to be a wind down at the end. And you can't regret any of that because it's all part of the package.
You asked a very interesting question, and I sort of went off and started thinking about it while you were talking. You said you wonder if most people or many people have those kinds of thoughts, you know, whether people think about those things. And I always have thought about those things, and I just assume everybody does. But the other part of my mind says, no, a lot of people don't think about anything. They don't think about things. And those people are very dangerous.
Why do you say that?
Well, they go about their business and they're not there. They're not thinking about things. They don't have critical thinking. They don't question. They don't question what's going on around them. They don't have curiosity. I hope that this is not a very large segment of the population, but I wonder about that. You don't know what other people are really thinking or what they're like or how they see the world. You know what color blue is in their sky.
Yes, but don't you think it's best to assume that everybody's pretty similar?
In some ways, yeah, we all are similar. At least we have that belief. It makes us comforted to think that we're not alone. You know, there are certain philosophies where people think they're the only person who's conscious, and everybody else is a figment of their imagination. We have no proof. We have no proof that that's not the case.
No, but that's kind of a self-centered thing. I just try to assume the obvious. The most obvious thing would be out of whatever we have 5 or 6 billion people, that we all pretty much process the world the same way. Some people tend to be introverts or others extroverts. You know, there are all those personality types, and some people are more nuanced in their thinking and others are more external and physical in the way they look at life. But I don't know that there's that much variation beyond that.
Yeah, it's possible we all really are quite the same. And then when you see the diversity that humanity serves up, and how some people are deeply spiritual and other people are shallow and some people are crass and some people are gentle and others are hostile and nasty and mean, and there are killers and criminals and people without any ethics and others who care very much about their fellow human, care about animals, are kind, I don't know, smart, stupid. We do come in many we come in many different shapes, sizes, and forms.
Yes, but yet, one of the interesting things about us is the way we come pre-programmed to be able to do certain things. Like, you know how we can know a face. We can know somebody we know from a distance in a crowd by the slight tilt of their head or their posture. You know, we have certain things that are hyper acute in their ability to discern.
That's a remarkable insight. You're absolutely right.
And as a result, why couldn't it be that we magnify things that look like big differences that aren't really that different?
Well, yes, and that's why civil wars are the bloodiest wars, as are family fights, you know, blood wars. The more similar warring parties are, the more vicious their battles. Familiarity breeds contempt. We are easily hurt and easily angered by people with whom we're close. We're more judgmental of people the more similar to us they are. Intra or inner religious wars and conflicts and family fights and civil wars are always the worst kind. We're very, very, very harsh on our own people. So that's an interesting aspect of humanity. But I guess we have as much in common as we have dissimilarities, and that's part of the difficulty of negotiating, you know, arrangements and deals and contracts and, you know, countries. I mean, here on the radio, isn't that what we deal with? We deal with argument. We deal with competing interests. We are extremely critical. You know, how dare them do that? And look at this. And who do we blame? And what should we fear? And who do we blame? You know,
and those differences might be the result of tiny little points in the road where we diverge in small amounts. But then over time, you everybody keeps rolling in the direction they're rolling, and then suddenly you don't recognize each other.
I don't know if you remember an old Star Trek from the original series with, you know, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, but there were these two guys that were from another planet, and they were chasing each other all over the galaxy, and they hated each other, and they were a race of people where one half of their body was black and one half of their body was white. They looked like humanoids. They looked like regular humans.
Okay. Were they just opposite halves?
Well, they never could understand. In Star Trek, the whole time, they couldn't understand, why do these two people hate each other? These two men were fighting and trying to kill each other. And I think their entire races had been destroyed, and they were the last two left of these two warring factions from this planet. And Nimoy and Spock, Spock and Kirk couldn't understand, what are you guys fighting about? You know, and they said, can't you see the difference between us? And as it turned out, one was black on the left side, and the other was black on the right side. And, you know, it was back in the, you know, those days when there were little moral, you know, lessons to be taught. But that's, you know, that's what it is. Now, if another life form were to come to Earth that was completely different than us, very, very different, maybe ethereal or spiritual, or, you know, that we wouldn't even recognize them as life, and they came to Earth, they might report back to their planet that there's just one life form on Earth, and they may not be able to tell the difference between us and dogs and monkeys and bugs. They might say, the planet is crawling with bugs. And they may think that we're just another bug, like a roach.
Oh, isn't that interesting? We do have a lot of bugs here.
Oh, yeah. I kind of see it as the planet of the bugs. I think we're all a bunch of Earth bugs, if you really want to know.
But so were you bringing up Star Trek because there's a new TV show coming?
Oh, yes. Actually, that is one of the big buzzes of the Star Trek world last night. Was the long-awaited debut. Unfortunately, it's on CBS All Access, which is not, you know, the most mainstream channel. But then again, what is anymore? It's called Picard, Star Trek Picard. And Patrick Stewart has come back to play the most beloved character in the entire Star Trek canon. And that is Captain, who eventually turned Admiral and eventually retired, Jean-Luc Picard.
He's the most popular character? Is that what
Yes, without question. Without question. Maybe not
Spock.
Maybe
was the big guy.
Spock is big. Data is big. A lot of them are big. But if you were to do a survey of everybody that loves Star Trek, I think they would say that the character they all admire most is Jean-Luc Picard. As a matter of fact, if Jean-Luc Picard were a real person, he could probably beat Donald Trump in this next election.
Well, that must mean he's super popular.
I'm telling you, if I were asked, name somebody that you think would make a great leader, a great president, the character that Patrick Stewart has created, Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Enterprise, he would be fantastic. Anybody listening to this who knows Star Trek, and I'd say a good percentage of the people do, would probably agree with me. But so this new show on this, you know, all access channel, like $5.99 a month, and
that's a CBS thing.
CBS thing, yeah. They have a couple of new Star Trek shows, and this Picard thing is just the buzz of the Star Trek world. So they've been talking about it for about 2 years, and finally it debuted. They have 10 episodes, and they roll one out a week, and then they keep it up on the, you know, the website, so that you could binge one.
Yeah,
or
later,
two.
If later, you want to wait and pretend it doesn't exist yet.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I watched it last night, and I have
all
to
right,
tell you.
Hold on. Give us a review coming up.
I will.
A little tease. We'll take a break. Michael Harrison is here because it's Friday on WTIC. Yes, there he is. Boldly going where no man has gone before. It's Michael Harrison.
Doesn't that music make you well up with the emotion that you want to cry?
No, but it does have a little drama to it.
Yeah,
but
I
wasn't a Star Trek fan.
Too bad you had to go through your whole life deprived of that. That's
yes, but I watched Lost in Space.
Oh no, not the same. Not the same.
Well, no, not the same at all. But
I spoke with a leading executive who will remain unnamed in the radio business earlier today, and he knows that I'm a Star Trek fan, and he is. So we talked about Picard, and he admitted to me there were moments in the show last night that he became teary-eyed, and I admitted that I did too.
So this was the first show of the
first
new
one. Yeah.
Series. This is a new spinoff after, what, 50 years or something?
No. They had a spinoff 2 years ago, Star Trek Discovery. And
no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean the first one ever, but it's 50 years maybe since Star Trek. What was that, 68
or
something?
It was in the late 60s, yeah. It was a network show that was taken off for low ratings. Is that unbelievable?
It
has become
is.
The most successful entertainment franchise of our, you know, of our era. And it's because it's optimistic. It shows a world in which, there are wars and there are battles and there are suffering and
but man progresses.
Yeah, but there is a hopefulness about it. There is a definite hopefulness about it. I don't know if anything can be made anymore that doesn't have some kind of fighting, shooting, and killing. So, you know, that's just part of our
car
nature.
Crashes. You at least need big explosive crashes.
Well, think about movies. Have you ever gone to the movies lately? And you know, you it says in the paper, or whatever that means, it says in the paper. I don't know. But there's
not
an
that
old
anyone
expression.
Reads it.
Yeah, hey, yeah, where's the paper? But you find out, you call ahead or whatever, that the show starts at 7 o'clock. You get there at 7, invariably, you know, you're rushing. You get your ticket, you go to your seat. And what starts at 7 o'clock is the commercials for all the local businesses that advertise on the screen. Then they go, after they sell you stuff, then they go into trailers.
20 minutes.
And they go to 20 minutes of trailers. And at every trailer, if you close your eyes, they sound like this. You know, boom, 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 boom.
But the volume's turned up like double as loud as the movie.
Deep-voiced announcer, and then an explosion. Deep-voiced announcer, then an explosion. Then they go to the next trailer. Deep-voiced announcer, then an explosion. Just deep voices and explosions. And sometimes you say, wait a second, is this the same movie that the trailer? And it's a new trailer, but you can't tell the difference. So I used to do trailers when I was a kid.
What do you mean?
I was a voice on trailers back when I was in my early 20s.
Come on, do the voice. Let's hear the Harrison trailer voice.
Joseph E. Levine presents Carnal Knowledge. Fortune and Men's Eyes. Robert Redford is Jeremiah Johnson.
Wow.
The trailers and radio and television voice tracks.
Were those movies you actually did?
Yeah. Wow, oh, yeah. I did about 10 movies back in the 70s.
That's wonderful. You've got that kind of voice, too.
Yeah, yeah. It was, get real close to the microphone and you just talk like that. So when I haven't done it in years, I went off to, I left New York and did other things. So I never auditioned or was considered.
You just knew somebody and they threw you.
They would just call me. They heard me on the radio and they said, mm-hmm. we want your voice. And then they started using me. So it was kind of cool. But
what fun.
But the trailers today, they put everything into the trailer. That they, all the best scenes are in the trailer. That's all.
Yeah,
you have
if it's
to...
a comedy, they might have three jokes that could make you laugh, and they're all in the trailer.
But you go back to like this Picard thing. You got all these geeks out there that love Star Trek on a level where they're actually mentally ill, and CBS puts out a trailer. The trailer is an event. The trailer goes maybe 2.5 minutes, and there's a 1.5 minute trailer. There's the 4 minute trailer. And the trailers are like all trailers, blip, blop, boom, boom, this, that. Everything is a sound bite and a scene. One word here, one word there, a flash. And these geeks have talk shows on YouTube, and there are hundreds of them, in which they analyze the trailer to try to figure out, okay, what's the story going to be? And they're always wrong. Because, the people that make these shows know that deal, it was very funny.
This is what I'm thinking about while I'm watching, while I try to watch the impeachment coverage, because impeachment TV seems so dull and so irrelevant to me and I'm thinking about all this stuff that you can watch on YouTube and all the streaming stored shows you can binge on. And why would anybody be watching any significant portion of congressmen giving the same speeches they were giving a couple of months ago?
I know. They owe it to us in the talk radio world to freshen the speeches, change the argument, give us something to hang our coats on. For gosh sakes, it's awful. Do you know, I think there's an amendment in the United States Constitution prohibiting cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes.
Well, the senators in the United States Senate that have to sit through this.
I thought you were going to say those senators are cruel and unusual.
No, they're being subjected to it. It's fascinating that the stories that are coming out of this, and this has to do with senators on both sides of the aisle.
All right, hold that thought. We'll take a break for news. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday on WTIC. Yeah. That is us, the rebellious ones. It's Friday. Michael Harrison is here. So I just got a text from a selectman in Kent, out in the western part of the state, and he says that you've got it wrong.
Uh-oh.
That Spock is the best. Wanted to let you know.
Them's fighting words.
So, yeah, it's amazing, this whole impeachment thing and...
Oh, yeah.
How tedious the TV is.
Well, the fact that we judge it by television terms tells a lot about the blurry line between reality and true news.
Well, except even if it is true news, it's what kind of news is that? To have people repeating over and over again. What we are doing is seeing how the sausage gets made. And this is what these poor guys have to put up with all year, is... people giving speeches that everyone's already heard before, but they're posing so they can get a little video of it that they can show in their districts.
That's probably what it is. It's very depressing. It's extremely depressing. What I said before about the fact that it's judged in terms about how interesting it is, it shows you how the quality of our political discourse has sunk to terrible, terrible lows.
But if there's actual... we're old enough to remember the Nixon stuff, the hearings that were held on Nixon. And there was this sense of intense drama that this was an incredible moment in American history. And I've watched them, not right now, but a few weeks ago in Congress when they were doing their impeachment hearings, and they were trying to somehow bring up an apparition of what happened back during the Nixon years. But it's all a facsimile. It's not the real thing. The real drama and emotion isn't there. No, and doesn't that tell us something legitimate about what's going on?
It tells us a lot. Yeah, it tells us a lot. And also the fact that it's the voting has been almost totally down party lines really is very telling as well. During Clinton and Nixon, of course, never was impeached. He quit before it would happen. He had no choice but to. He was going to be impeached, and he probably would have been ousted. Clinton was already a new era, and now we're used to it. I mean, when Nixon was facing impeachment, there hadn't been anybody in that under that word impeachment since Andrew Johnson. Ancient history. I mean, that wasn't that far after the Jurassic era. And, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about impeaching Nixon. That was shocking. When it happened with Clinton, it was, all right, we had just had it with Nixon. But now this is what happens. This is how you get rid of a president. You impeach him. And it's just constant campaigning. There's no honeymoon. There's no period of grace. There's no such thing as the loyal opposition. There's no such thing as bipartisanship. All these things that make a democracy operate efficiently, they're out the window. And damn it, we have a real problem on our hands in this country. We can't go on like this. We have to do something about it.
Like what? We can't go on like what?
We can't go on where the entire political discussion is bogus, left versus right, Democrat versus Republican, victory over truth, smearing, mudslinging, lying, and just this preposterous behavior. It cannot go on.
Well, it can't go on indefinitely, I suppose, because people would get too exhausted with it and hold it in such high disregard that it would be like we don't have a government anymore. And that's where I think we're at. We don't really have a government anymore. We have these political parties who stand between us and our government, and they do what they want to do for their own best interest. They're not trying to run the country or run states or what have you. And I think that realization will have to set in, that this is all about them. It's got nothing to do with us.
And the media is part of the plot. The media is no better. We don't have a media that's out there looking to give us information we need that we can trust. We have media that's out there pandering to our tastes and to our biases.
And also looking for explosions. They want everything to be a car crash where they don't have to do any work. They just aim the camera. The flames are there. And this is the politics is now designed around that need of the media.
Yeah. So this is not a good situation, because for a democracy to function well, all of these different pillars of democracy, business, government, media, the press, even the bureaucracy, even the deep state, they have to work with goodwill and harmony, and this is not happening.
But this is not the first time we haven't had goodwill and harmony. There have been vicious, angry periods before.
So I hear, but but I'm not sure that this particular era in which we are living is not one of the worst of all time in American history. And I'm not sure, because I don't have the experience of being around, you know, when Aaron Burr shot Alexander Hamilton to death, you know, when fist fights would break out on the floor of Congress.
Well, think about that. Imagine if they were scheduling duels. What would we be saying then?
Yeah,
and it was just 40, 50 years ago when there were explosions going on at government buildings because the politics was so steeped in rage.
So maybe, you know, maybe it's always been that way. Maybe it hasn't been that way. But you know, without getting too deep into the weeds, there are statistics out there, and I don't have anything handy, so I don't want to. I'm not setting something up. But there are statistics out there that indicate, based upon intelligent measurement, that right now we are more polarized than we've been in decades, maybe even in a century.
It concerns me that statement, which is true, I think, is true because of structural changes in the way political parties are operating, where they have become polarized for certain reasons that don't have to do with the fact that we are so polarized right now. So this change in the structure of political parties through the years that has caused them not to be the multi-attitudinal places they used to be, where each party had liberals and conservatives and everything in between, and their fights were more abstract. Now it's divided up by ideology, and that has maybe caused a lot of this sensation that things are a lot more electrified than they used to be.
You make a good point, and the irony of it all is that they're not true to the ideology that they hide behind the label of.
Well, that's true, too, yes.
I mean, you know, the left is not really the left in many cases. The right is not really the right in many cases. When Donald Trump first began to seem like a serious player in the Republican Party, many, many, many card-carrying Republicans were fearful that he was not a true Republican and he wasn't a true conservative. He was more of a populist with some liberal overtones, some liberal background, and basically a guy that would be whatever it took to be expedient. Now he's the voice and the symbol of the Republican Party and of the conservative movement. So what is it really about? Is it really about teams and colors and personalities?
I think so.
Or is there some kind of true ideological base that runs true to every single circumstance and issue under the banner of these two parties?
No, but there are ideologies mixed in there. But no, I think it's about team, rooting for teams. It's Yankees suck syndrome, I call it.
Right, it's tribal.
Yeah. So you reminded me of something. I love the Apple. I don't like that the Attorney General of the United States is trying to intimidate Apple to cause there to be a leak in its own secure systems. It seems to me that we have a crisis in the world today that you can't have secure internet, and government and big corporations can't protect their data. So Apple has these phones that you can't break into because they're so beautifully encrypted, and the federal government is trying to force them to poke a hole in their own secure thing.
Yeah, and that is a disgrace. I hope that you're on the side of Apple not having to succumb to that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
it pisses
good.
Me off. And you made me think of it because it's one of those issues that makes people break in surprising directions compared to what their parties would do. So in general, the Republicans are supposed to be the small government, believe in the Constitution, and secure our constitutional rights party. And in general, Democrats are the party of oppression, of big government, big bureaucracies making decisions, anti-democratic in the way they do government. And this thing tends to cut the other way.
Yeah, and it has. These things have cut one way and the other many times over history. That's why you can't take this left-right thing too seriously, because, for example, one of the greatest Republicans of all time, Theodore Roosevelt, was basically a progressive. He was an environmentalist. He would be out there screaming about climate change. But he was a Republican, and he was a Republican that, in many ways, was a true Republican. But he was a anti-big business. I'm pointing out just one thing comes to mind. John F. Kennedy, by today's standards, would be considered to be maybe a moderate to serious conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he would maybe somebody would call him a rhino.
But part of that is the problem with these labels. Humans, we depend on these words, and we like the words so much that even as the realities underneath the umbrellas of those words, even as they change 180 degrees, we keep thinking it's the same entity.
Exactly, because most people don't study political science. Most people don't have a real knowledge. Not that I do. When I say most people, I'm not saying, hey, you know, I know all the answers. No, but I'm at least smart enough to know how smart I'm not.
Yes, but it's not just a political thing. I mean, this is a problem we have with words, where sometimes we've used words so much and their meanings have become, we think we know what they mean so much that we lose track of what they mean. So we're talking past each other because each person thinks the word is something different because it depends on when you're defining it.
That's very true, too. And again, without any example popping into my mind, because I know you're going to say, well, give me an example. I have often had the situation where I use a word and I use it a lot. And then I decide, you know something? I'm going to check it out in the dictionary, make sure I got it right. And I find out I've been using the word wrong. Have you ever had that happen?
It happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was in shock. I wish I could remember.
It's embarrassing.
What it was.
Yeah.
It, well, I don't know. I think everybody else might be in the same place with me. But it was funny to look it up and find out it didn't mean at all what I thought it was. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday. We'll continue coming up on WTIC. Yeah, it's Friday. Michael is here. We're supposed to say Michael is in the house, I guess, but I don't know. That's kind of a... it's one of those cliches.
Yeah, it's a cliche. Or Michael has left the building. What did that start with? Did that start with Elvis or was
that
before Elvis?
Yeah, I think that means you're dead, right? And that I think Elvis was the first guy to die, yeah.
No, I think left a building means that a person is so important that when they're in the building, it matters. You see, maybe I went my whole life not knowing that meant something else. I just thought it was sort of like a, you know, an honor to be so important that when you leave the building relaxes. The security.
Everybody can just say, "Ah, okay, we're done with that."
Right, exactly.
That hysteria.
Well, you know, some people do have heavier vibes than others.
Isn't it funny how we hold people up who are have iconic stature? Elvis was an amazing singer, but I'm not sure that there was much else about him that you would want to say that I want that to be me. You know, I think he struggled with all other aspects of living.
Most people didn't even know what he was about. His personality was basically, you know, he was, thank you. What's it? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You know, but
he did a great job of that. I'm sure he spent years practicing that before he got famous.
Yeah, but he certainly was able to go. You know.
No, he was a real innovator. He was a disruptor.
Yeah, he was.
He had a great voice.
It's very hard to hear somebody like Elvis objectively. It's Elvis. You know, it's not like, listen to him singing. It's like the air or clouds.
But, you know, there are things that make you hear it. Like I said to you about that Beatles movie yesterday that was out a few weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, where when I saw it finally, they made me hear the music fresh. And it is possible to hear songs like Yesterday that you've heard thousands of times, and something about the way they juxtaposed it in the film, you could hear it fresh, and you say, "Wow, this is an amazing song."
Yeah, well, that was the purpose of that movie, was to show you just how great that music was, and they did a great job of it.
And occasionally, I'll hear something like a Sinatra track, and I'll just say, "Wow, listen to that voice."
Well, I find myself now that I have, I'm older than a lot of the people I grew up with as the older generation. In other words, I'm older today than, say, Frank Sinatra was when I was watching him as a kid.
Yep.
And you suddenly see these people through different eyes from the older generation. They were not hip. They were the ones your parents liked. They were, you know, they weren't cool like the people of our generation.
Yes.
And then you get older than they were. They're dead. They're gone. And you're looking at them on television. You're looking at them in their movies. It's been reconstituted, redigitized. It looks like it was just made. And you go, "Oh, my God, were they talented?" Or, "Boy, were they good looking?" Or, "Wow, what charisma." And you never notice it because they look like old people. They look like old people when we were kids, and now they look like young people. So you get this whole different perspective on the past and the players in it, such as Sinatra or any number of those people. I mean, I thought Sinatra was the uncoolest thing that ever lived when I was a young rocker.
Yep.
Now I look at Sinatra like, I go, "Wow, what an interpreter of lyrics, and what a deliverer of songs, and what great arrangements. Music that I, as a kid, used to be at war against. We wanted to replace that old fogey stuff."
Yes, get it off the radio.
Yeah.
Because there was that time in the early 60s when there was a split, when half of the tunes would be, you know, these boots were made for walking, and then there was rock and roll happening, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these boots were made for walking was sort of on the line between the two.
It was trying to cross it over.
But yeah. There was a time when you turn on your rock station, you know, like a WABC in New York or one of the stations here in Hartford that I won't say the call letters. You would hear on the same station the Beatles, and you would hear Percy Faith and his orchestra doing Summer Place. you know, which is considered beautiful music in those days. Remember the term beautiful music?
Yes.
Strings,
that was,
orchestras.
I worked in radio stations that played all those orchestral covers of pop.
That's how
hits.
I started. I started as a, I was 18 years old, 19 years old, doing a show called Dinner for Two.
Really?
Yeah.
You were the waiter?
I was serving up scintillating rhythms for your cocktail hour.
I am looking along those lines. I'm looking. I've got right here a sealed Meet the Beatles album.
Oh,
not an original one, but it's sealed nevertheless. But it's identical to what the original one was. It came out maybe a few years later. And it says Meet the Beatles. Underneath it, it says in smaller print, subtitle, the first album by England's phenomenal pop combo. And
right.
You know, it still kills me that there was a period of time when the Beatles, this biggest act in the history of mankind, were being packaged by Capitol Records without their input.
Right, without their input. They didn't know. They were just kids. They were happy to have a deal. Something like 20, 25 record companies passed on the Beatles before Capitol or EMI or whatever their subsidiary was actually took a chance on them.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? You know, so what do they know? What do professional people in any industry know? You could be made a fool out of. I mean, look, only one out of 100, one out of 200, one out of 1,000 things presented to you is actually going to go on to be a success, but you don't want to be the one to miss it.
But when, at the moment, I think when the Beatles were ready to become a success, I think anybody could tell. I'm not sure. Anyway, we're out of time. Michael Harrison, always good to talk with you.
Great. Have a great weekend. Everybody out there, have a great weekend. I'll see you next Friday, Todd.
Yes.
Thank you.
1 week from today, Michael Harrison returns.